Good morning, everybody. It's good to see all of you here. In Pam's prayer, she said, she prayed that the words that are spoken would honor God. And that is actually the subject that I would like to approach this morning, something I confess myself rather a feeble instrument to do. But we will try. In the book of Daniel, in the 7th chapter, in the 13th verse, it says, "As my vision continued at night, I saw someone who looked like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence, and he was given authority, honor, and royal power over all the nations of the world, so that every race, nation, language would obey him. His rule is eternal. It will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed." There's a story where this was not the case, and it's found in the first book of Samuel, if you want to turn there with me. We're going to go to 1 Samuel 8. And this is a story of a time when his kingdom and dominion were reduced, where they were taken away, so to speak. And this is a story where Israel requests a king. Now, did Israel have a king, first of all? They did they not? But Israel had a problem. It says, "As Samuel grew older, he appointed his sons to be judges over Israel." And it didn't go well. That's kind of the synopsis of it. His sons did not behave like their father. And so the leaders of Israel kind of started to get a little bit concerned. They said, "Wow, man, Samuel's getting older, right? And his sons are not like him, and we might be in some trouble here." And it never ceases to amaze me and encourage me, because I have the same problem, at the shortness of memory that people tend to have. Because if you remember at the beginning of Samuel's life, what situation did we have? We had Eli, and Eli had two sons too, didn't he? Now, Eli's two sons, they were no models of rectitude, were they? Not at all. They were terrible. If you read some of the things that were going on, the goings-on at the temple in his days, they were pretty bad. Now, had God said, "You know what, Eli's getting old and his sons are pretty bad, I think we should give Israel a king," was that his solution? Was it? No. What did God do? He raised up a man as his representative, who then went to the people and judged them fairly in the name of God. But yet here Israel is forgotten. They've forgotten, and they turn, as we so often do, to a human solution. And they looked around and they thought, "Wow, look at the kingdoms around us. Aren't they fancy? Look at their kings. You know, they strut up and down like a bunch of peacocks. They tell everybody what to do. They ride out at the head like a hood ornament when it comes to war." Ever notice how ironical that is? The king's riding out to war until they actually get to battle, and then where does he go? To the back. Okay? Kind of. It's always struck me as very ironic. But they had this idea, and it says that finally the leaders of Israel met at Ramah to discuss the matter with Samuel. "And look," they told him, "you're now old, and your sons are not like you. So give us a king like all the other nations have." And it never ceases to amaze me the depth that's contained in the scriptures. So I want to take a look. What kind of king did the other nations have? What was Israel asking to be signed up for? It's a good question, is it not? And so I want to take a look at a few kings. We know, of course, what king they got from this, and that was who? Kids? Was that? It was Saul. Now, he's a good-looking man. Tall, broad-shouldered, you know? Looked like he could wield three swords at once, you know? He was warlike kind of guy. How did that end, by the way? It didn't end well. It ended up with the Philistines defeating the armies of Israel. Saul ended up as a suicide. Israel was now subjected to Philistia. Didn't end well at all. So as the scriptures aptly say, man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart, right? This is the kind of king they wanted. And I want to take a look at some of the kings. I'm not just going to look at some bad heathen kings, because we have people like Nebuchadnezzar. Probably, you know, I would say probably the greatest king from a human viewpoint in the rulership of this, of the kingdoms of this earth that's ever lived. That guy was impressive. The things that he accomplished at a young age were very impressive. I mean, you got to hand it to the guy, and he knew it. And you remember what happened, right? Walking around up on his housetop after he received what warning? He had a dream, right? Second dream. And what was the upshot of the dream? I can just throw it into a very short synopsis. Was, hey, listen, quit oppressing your people. Break off your wickedness. Or is going to be some trouble coming? And what happened to him? Well, he ended up out in the fields eating grass, like, you know. But what was the tendency in his rule has been the tendency in all the rulers of this world. And what is that tendency? What do kings do? Why do people want to be kings?
Power.
Power, control, wealth. Power over whom? So it's not like, well, I can build a dam in the river and I have power over the river. No, it's not over things, it's over people, is it not? And the way the world exercises power is subjugation of those who are underneath you. Correct? You take some of the emperors of China, and people were not any better than cattle. So if you died building the Great Wall, we'll just chuck you in as mortar. You know, horrible things were done by pagan kings. You see this happening, the kings of Assyria. The things they would do to not only those who they warred against, but to their own people. The one who was on top was the king. Everybody down from there was trying to get up higher than down there, because everything at the bottom was really bad. Okay, that's the kingdoms of this earth. Now you think, well, yeah, those are heathen kings. Those are the bad guys, right? You know, Nebuchadnezzar deserved a licking. But let's take a look at a few kings that were not, quote unquote, bad. Contrary, and I use that very loosely, because the Bible says there's none good, not one. Okay. And I think we can't do any worse than to go to the wisest man that ever lived. And who is he, kids? Solomon. Very good. Yes. Solomon. He gave him God said, I'll give you a wise and an understanding heart. I'll give you wealth like no other king before or after you. And he said, I will give you peace from your enemies. So Solomon has got it made in the shade, so to speak, right? So God gave him wealth. So was there any need to oppress his people? I said, I was trying to remember that as I was waiting to come up here. And there was something that was said in the scriptures about God. Solomon made silver as common as dirt or rocks in Israel, right? And I can't remember what he made gold as common as silver. I don't remember. But very wealthy time in Israel's history. Extremely wealthy. Didn't have to oppress his people whatsoever, right? He was looked up to, highly regarded. Very wise. The kings of the earth came and gave him honor. They cooperated with him. No wars. What ended up happening? Well, when his son Rehoboam came on the scene, the people got together and they came to him and they asked for what? Relief. Relief? From this righteous king? Well, you know, we know he kind of went downhill on the other side of it with, you know. But they said, could you please ease the burden a little bit? Can you just take your foot off our throat just for a second so we can breathe? What did Rehoboam say? You ain't seen nothing yet. My father chastised you with whips. I'll beat you with scorpions. Wow. So you can see even the quote-unquote best of us kings of this earth are pretty tyrannical. It seems to me that as soon as somebody gets power, and everybody's been stopped by that officer, if you know what I mean, okay? That officer who's, or you've had a surprise visit from that FAA inspector who isn't happy till you're not happy. We've all seen it, right? When someone is given power, even if they're most well-intentioned, what seems to happen? You've heard that the saying that power corrupts and that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we see it borne out throughout history and even in our day-to-day lives. And so here in Daniel, we have a kingdom being given to somebody that's permanent. Now, if we were to give a kingdom to someone here that was permanent, I would be very afraid. And I think every single one of us would be afraid. The greatest king, though, in the history of this world, and I say that with reservations to someone we're going to talk about in a little while, is a king that is found in Isaiah 14, if you want to turn there with me. The 14th chapter of Isaiah. This is a very powerful king. The king of Babylon. But I'm not talking about, and this is not talking about, Nebuchadnezzar or Nebuchadnezzar or Belteshazzar or any of the kings of Babylon that ruled. This is talking about a different king altogether. I'm going to start in verse 4. Let's start in verse 3. It's talking about a wonderful day, and that this day is when God's people are delivered from the king of Babylon. But what's important here is not the deliverance and the description of that, but what's important is how the king of Babylon has behaved. What the principles, more importantly, what the principles of his kingdom are. How things are to work in the kingdom of this king of Babylon. And I want to take a look at it. It says, in that wonderful day, when the Lord gives his people rest from sorrow and fear, from slavery and chains, you will taunt the king of Babylon. You will say the mighty has been destroyed. Yes, your insolence is ended, for the Lord has crushed your wicked power and broken your evil rule. This is what he did, and it goes on to state what he did. You persecuted the people with unceasing blows. With rage and held the nations in your angry grip. Your tyranny was unrestrained. Anybody here ever received a spanking? Or is that just a good, yeah, thank me too, you know? In fact, when I grew up and looked back, I thought, man, I should have got a lot more of them than I did. When you're having that spanking, does it, you know, it may have only been 3 or 4 swats and you're thinking it's never going to end. Anybody else, you know? Oh, is this ever going to end? I'm going to die, right? You know, sometimes it felt like, whoa, this is going to be. But here we have a ruler who has continually struck over and over and over and over again as the King James says, with a continual stroke, those who are under his domination, a continual stroke. Who is the king of Babylon being spoken here? Well, you go down to verse 12, it makes it completely unambiguous. It says in 12, how are you fallen from heaven, O son of the morning? Star of the morning, sorry. How have you been cast down to the earth? Who is this? It's Satan, also known as Lucifer. The highest created being in the universe. The being with the most intelligence. The being that was closest to the throne of God. The one who had seen the most of God's glory and majesty. And had seen God do things that we can only imagine. That's who this is. And yet here he is described as a king of Babylon. A king that oppresses. That beats continually. Those people who are underneath him. It carries on. I'd like to say it gets better, but it really doesn't. It says in verse 20, you will not be given a proper burial, for you have destroyed the nations and slaughtered your people. And I think that if there's more that can be read there if you want to sometime, but I think that these two sections in here really encapsulate the kingdom of this world, does it not? Anybody else get heartsick every time you turn on the news? It's just gotten to be to the point where it's just a constant, a continual parade of sorrow and grief, of anger and hatred. And this is the kingdom we're talking about. This is his kingdom. This is what he argued would be so great. This is what a third of the angels signed up for. And this is what Adam and Eve signed us up for. Now, if I had to take a vote, how many of you would vote for this kingdom? Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see that we all have retained our sanity. Even this world, with everything it's got to offer, with all of the baubles, all of the money, all of the fame, all of the power, does not equal in happiness, does it? If it was so great to have lots of money and fame and notoriety, why do we see so many celebrities in rehab? Why are there so much drug abuse in those people that have everything? Going back to the Israelites, they desired a different king. They said, you know what? We don't want God as our king. We want to have the kingdoms of this world. And we've looked at a few of these kings and at the King of Kings, and I use that all in lower case, extremely lower case, okay? Very low case. We've looked at the self-styled king of all kings in this world as Lucifer, and we've seen the principles that animate humanity in its kings, that animated Lucifer. And I want to take a look at what Israel had rejected. What was it that they had said, you know what, we don't want this anymore. We want a king like the other nations. Who were they rejecting? It was God. And that's what God told Samuel. He said, you know, and Samuel must have been a little down, disheartened, you know, because sometimes when someone doesn't like your idea or doesn't like what you're doing and they say, ugh, you can kind of take it personally, right? Well, maybe I'm the only one who can. But Samuel was taken a little bit personally. You know, first of all, they insulted his family, and they probably had every right to, and I think he knew it. But he said, man, they don't want me anymore. And God says, no, it's not you that they've rejected. It's me, that I shouldn't rule over them. Now, I think a short review of God's dealings with his people is in order. Now, let's see if they had a genuine beef. And I can go a long way back, but I'll just go back to when the people came into Canaan, okay? The first thing he did is he kept their shoes dry. They didn't have to wade through a river. He kept them dry. They walked through on dry land. Then he said, well, I want you to attack Jericho, right? And lots of them were slaughtered. No, they weren't. No, just walk around it. Watch what I do. You know, and as they went through the land, you don't have enough time for this battle? Okay, just hang on. I'm going to stop the sun in its course. You know, when they left him, well, surely here's a cause for complaint. Because when they left him, then he let some bad guys come into the country and take it over, right? No, that was mean. Surely that was mean, right? Or was it? How many of you who are parents think that it's the best thing, the most loving thing, to leave your children unchecked when they are going away that will end in them being hurt? So I don't see any beef there. Because you see what happened when God brought them back. In fact, I see some patience there, to be honest with you, because this didn't happen just one time. It happened over and over and over. Anyway, you get the idea. Again. Maybe it was the God who had, you know, had kept these fierce tribes that were around them while they worshipped him in order. Maybe that was the God, the terrible God that they'd rejected. Did they have any grounds, I guess is my point, for rejecting God? So why did they? What was that, Larry? They wanted to do their own thing. Yeah, they thought, you know what? They thought, you know, and this is the perverseness of the human heart we're talking about here. They thought, you know, I think we can do it better. Man can do it better. So give us a king like those nations have. They saw all of the glitter of human power and pomp and pride and thought, wow, that's fancy. I must admit to liking shiny things, as anyone who's seen my airplane will attest. I like shiny things. I like chrome. I like, you know, all these shiny things. But here we're talking in a spiritual sense. They thought that what the heathen had was much better. Have you noticed that in your own life? That the attractions, the allure of sin seems to be pretty fancy, right? Well, God gave them a warning about it, and he's given us warning when it comes to sin as well. And what did he tell them would be the result of them having a king? We'd be all rainbows and unicorns, right? Now, what was the result going to be? Does anybody remember? It's going to be oppression. Yeah, he's going to take your sons for his army, his daughters to be his bakers. He's going to take your land. He's going to tax you. Anybody here feel that kind of pain these days? Ooh, you know that time of year, right? When you just wish that they just would leave you alone. When the tax bills come due, maybe it's a little bit different if you're self-employed. Right, Dennis? That's your favorite time of year, right? Yeah, yeah, you're left huddled under a bridge somewhere, you know, shivering in the cold wind. That's what God said. Had God taxed them at all? Yeah, there was a tithe to sustain a ministry to minister to them, if you think about it. Well, yeah, but he wants tithes and offerings so that he can maintain a service for the salvation of your souls. Yeah, it's terrible. But he hadn't. He had not been oppressive, and yet they called themselves on themselves this oppression. So they really didn't have any grounds for complaint with God. And yet they rejected him. And this is where we get to the crux of the matter. And this is where it becomes personal for you and for me. Because they rejected him not because of anything he had done, but because of a condition that they were in. A condition that they were in. Christ said to his disciples that the sin of the world is unbelief. You've heard that, right? The sin of this world is, and he didn't say, he could have said the sin of the world is swearing and sexual immorality and gossiping and pride and backbiting, you know, and he could have gone on and on and on, but he stopped with one thing. The sin of the world is unbelief. But in that one sin is contained all of the ills of the world. Now, unbelief, what is unbelief? It's a good question, isn't it? Okay, it's a good question. But unbelief, and I heard it over here from my sweetheart, it has a component, unbelief has a component of distrust, does it not? Doesn't it? Yeah, when the disciples were out in that ship, they called it a ship, it was a boat. Not a big one at that. And the storm came down, and they're out there paddling for their lives, you know, and they get to their wits' ends, and they turn around, and Jesus having a siesta in the back. So why was he sleeping, and they were freaking out? What was the difference? Trust or unbelief? Because when he woke up, and he went, shh, and nature went, pfft. He's asked them one question. What was that? Don't you have faith? Don't you have trust? Don't you believe? And this starts to focus us in on this idea of what Israel rejected, and this idea of trust brings us back to what does humanity think of God really? Isn't it? Because if you distrust something, I remember my first airplane, until I went through a whopper of a storm, I didn't really trust it. Because I thought, you know, maybe there's some bolts somewhere that are going to let go, and you know, maybe the wing's going to fall off, or the tail's going to fall off, or something bad's going to happen. But after that storm, it's like, it's fine. Everything's good. But it comes down, this idea of trust comes down to what do you think of the one that you distrust or do trust? Isn't it? Doesn't that what it comes down to? Doesn't it not come down to what do you actually think of that person? Do you think that they are trustworthy, or do you think that they are faithless, devious, that they might say one thing this time and change their mind another time? Do you think that they are kind sometimes and unkind another time? It really comes down to what you actually think of the one that you're asked to trust. And what does man think of God? Let's make it a little more personal. What do you think of him? What do I think of him? Because if the sin of the world is unbelief, I think it behooves us to take a look by the grace of God at the heart. Not the heart of my neighbor, but the heart that beats in here and that ticks up here. Keith shared a little bit of this in Sabbath school. This exercise in trust is not fun. I've had a life full of these exercises, and I must probably be the slowest learner that there is, because it's been going on for years and years. Just lately, I said, "Lord, I got a bonehead about that thick." Because every time this happens, every time it comes around where the fear of not being able to trust you comes up, I always seem to err on the side of, give me a king like the rest of the world has, you know? If I just had some work and some money, I'd be in good shape, right? Then I would be safe and sound. Well, this is what's happened here lately is just a little tiny slice of my life. And it shows how, if that it's still going on, shows how deeply rooted my unbelief is. But I dare say I'm not the only one. Because it says, no temptation has taken you, but is common to all men and women. That would be you guys. So, you know, if I'm telling on myself, I may be telling on you too. But I have this airplane, like I mentioned, at sharing time. And I got a call from my inspector, and he said, you have got 6 weeks to do three and a half months worth of work on the airplane. And I just finished a job. I'm for those of you, Dennis said I should give a little synopsis. For those of you who don't know, I have a small cabinet shop. I do custom kitchens. And I just finished the last kitchen. And he calls me up, and I'm like, wow, that's a lot to do. This thing had no wings on it. The wings weren't painted. It was a lot of work to do. And so it started. 6 weeks in, he said, well, you got 2 more weeks, you know. Well, you could have told me that 3 weeks ago when I was freaking out. But anyway, the long story short, over this period of time, there has been, for 2 months now, I did not receive a single, and I mean a single, call for work. Not even crickets. I'd say crickets, but there weren't even crickets. All was quiet on the Western Front, so to speak, okay? Nothing. And I don't want to brag, but I'm a pretty good cabinet maker, okay? And there was nobody mad at me, you know? No one was surrounding my house, you know, with pitchforks and torches. And nothing, absolutely nothing. And at first it was, well, that's really cool of God, because I don't need the work right now. Right? It's funny how we trust only to a certain point. So I hit week 6, and all of a sudden the devil thought, now's my time. Now as he's getting weaker, I can see it, you know? It's been working 16 hours. The devil is mean. He kicks you when you're down, but he's been working 16 hours a day, and he's still, and so the little introduction of this, the thought comes in, right? That God. Boy, you know, you think you'd sure should have had some inquiries, you know. Even if you couldn't do them, you know, you should have had something. That's how it starts. And then the old unbelief in the human heart, or this heart anyway, starts up. Yeah, it's kind of have a point there. Kind of have a point, you know. What's going to happen? You know, you only got 2 weeks, and then what's going to happen, you know? And by the way, I mean, you got a carburetor to buy that you didn't know, and I don't know who makes these airplane parts, but they are wealthy people. Because you get 10 cents of stuff for $1,000, you know what I mean? But all these things started to go wrong then too. Not only that, they went wrong and they started to suck that money. And all this money was going out, because to restore an airplane takes a lot of money. A lot. Now, you could borrow it, but I wasn't going to borrow it, because I just felt that God didn't want me to do that. And so here, you know, you watch your savings doing the big slow circle, you know, and then getting faster as it ran out. And now you're down to about maybe 4 weeks worth of expenses to pay your bills and your overhead for the shop. And nothing. Nothing at all. No encouragement. No, you know, hey, attaboy stuff. And it starts to prey on your mind. And I don't know if any of you have ever been there. Maybe I'm the only one who fights these battles. Because it doesn't have to be about finances, okay? It can be about anything. It can be about that tendency you have. Maybe it's for gossiping. Maybe it's about respecter of persons. Maybe it's about hatred, unforgiveness, whatever it is. And, you know, it could be something more earthly, you know, some kind of a lust issue or anything that's been going on and on and on. And it seems like you are absolutely broke. And there's nothing being supplied for your needs. But in my case, it was this. And so the question came up in my mind, is God faithful? Is he trustworthy? Is this God, is he false and devious, where he says one thing and does another, or is he not? That was the question. And I've stood up here and I've had sermons on, you know, on Hebrews, where it says, be careful therefore, brothers and sisters, that there's not in you an evil heart of unbelief turning you away from the living God. And I was having this struggle. This evil heart of unbelief was manifesting itself. And you know, well, should we be advertising? You know, maybe we should throw a bunch of money at it. Is that our solution, right? We're going to throw our money at it. That'll fix it. You know, there's some undertones of the God of this world and all that stuff and what we trust in there as well, right? Or do we simply trust the Word of God, His promise? And then, of course, you realize that, you know what? That my attitude, the way I'm thinking, the fear that's going on, that's sinful. Because is it not sinful, by the way? Anybody want to say it's not? I won't. It is sinful. Because Christ said the sin of the world is what? Is unbelief. And so now not only are you in trouble, but you find yourself a sinner on top of it. Well, then the devil comes in and says, yeah, you know, God helps people, but you know, sinner people. You know, look what you're doing. How can he bless that? How can he bless this horrible mess you are? And then I found a beautiful verse. I didn't find it. I think God brought it to encourage me, you know. If we are unfaithful, God remains faithful, because he cannot deny himself. You know, there's no temptation that was common to men, and God is faithful. You know, just when I was going down the drain, yes, remember, Troy, you're not justified because you're so good. You're justified because of what God has done. And so on and on it went. Struggle, 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 struggle. You know, the mower breaks down. They're the bane of my existence. Anybody else? Anybody else have small engines as the bane of your existence? All right, yeah. I think they were invented by the devil to torment people. Well, at least me. Not brand new, but a couple year old Kubota, not supposed to just die. Shauna comes in with the good news. I drive it. It'll drive for 10 minutes and then it sputters and dies. It's got gas and everything. Oh, brother. And I'm right up to here in an airplane, right? It's funny how these things get piled on. Is it the carbon? Is it? I don't have time for this. And it came to my mind. It says, Troy, God said he will provide all your needs as you need them. I said, okay, I'm going to take him. I'm going to take this guy. I said, there's a mower there. And I looked at it. I did look at it, but there was nothing obvious. And I said, I don't know what's wrong with this thing. And I don't have time to deal with it, and I need you to help me. And I left it there, and I went up to the prison, went up to do chapel. And lo and behold, that chapel, one of the guys, oh, I had a problem with that. You use this stuff, throw it in your tank, and it'll fix everything. I thought, oh, brother, another one of those as seen on TV things. But I was desperate. You know, I threw that stuff in there. Mower has worked perfect. Isn't that wonderful? And then the air conditioning in the car blew up. Anybody ever work on an air conditioner in a car? That'll try men's souls. What am I going to do? It's blowing hot. You know, I don't have time for this. And I don't have money for this either. Anybody ever had to pay a bill to get an air conditioner fixed in your car? It's not for the faint. It hurts, doesn't it, Kathy? It's painful. Like, I just had a $600 starter blow up on me in the airplane. Where am I going to get money to do this? Okay, God. Fine. You're starting to sense a pattern, right? Oh, and that evening I came home and I looked it up and it said, oh, you know, change the relay and recharge the system. And lo and behold, $25 later and a half an hour's worth of work and the air conditioner's fine. Interesting. Wow. Okay. So you mean I can actually go to you, God, and you will help? I know it should have dawned on me a lot sooner than it had. And it had. But there's one thing to have it in here and another thing to have it in practice. And this is just a tiny slice, because this has been going on for a long time in life, especially being self-employed. And I could tell you story after story after story. And it's to my shame that I can tell you story after story after story, because you would think I'd have learned by now. But that evil is deep-seated in the heart. But there's something else that's deep-seated in the heart, and that's faithfulness. But it's not deep-seated in my heart. It's deep-seated in the heart of God. In fact, it is what he is. And he is faithful. He's faithful. And this brings us to the kingship of God. What does it look like? What does the kingship of God look like? The kingship of God does not consist in chrome and shiny bits. Have you noticed that? Now, if God had come down to this earth when Christ came the first time, robed in majesty and glory, would the Jewish leaders have nailed him to that cross? Why not? That's what they wanted. Yeah. Yeah, but is that where God's glory is? I could read you all sorts of verses about the throne of God. Have anybody ever read the first chapter of Ezekiel? Wow, there's a description. This mighty storm comes from the east, and under this storm, there's these four beings with wings stretched out, standing on wheels within wheels, covered with eyes, lightning flashing back and forth between them. Above them, a platform that looked like the sky, and upon it, a great throne. And someone sitting on that throne that the prophet can't even describe. The glory and the majesty that's there. I could talk to you about Revelation and where it talks about the throne, where he saw a rainbow like over the throne, 24 thrones around it, the glory, the splendor, the sea of glass mingled with fire. Millions, billions of angels like clouds in glory around that throne. That's the throne of God. I could talk to you about the throne of judgment, where he's sitting on a great white throne, and the potency, the power that emanates from that causes, as the scriptures declare it, the earth and the heavens to flee away. That's serious. We're not talking about people running. We're talking about the elements running. That could be the power. But there's coming a day when a song is going to be raised around that throne. And it's going to say, worthy is the Lamb that was slain and has redeemed us to God by his blood to receive what? Power, Would you be comfortable giving all power to any of the kings that we've talked about? Any king that's ever lived in history, even the best of them, would you be comfortable giving them all power? Would you be comfortable giving yourself all power? I would not. But here you have a group saying that he is worthy to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength. And then it gets really personal. And honor and glory and blessing. You read the description of what the Almighty, eternal, ever-existent, all-knowing, all-powerful God looks like on his throne. And then you think about this, that God made a promise. He made a promise to two frightened people standing naked and ashamed in a garden. And the promise that he made to them, when you realize who he is, what he is incredible beyond incredible. That the eternal God of heaven would come to this earth, humble himself, and become a creature. Not only that, but he who is perfect in holiness would take the punishment for the offense that was committed against himself upon himself. This is the God who spoke, and it was. Who commanded and it stood fast. This is the God who holds all things together by the power of his word, from the atomic level on out to the largest galaxies that spin through illimitable space. That's who. He made a promise. He made a promise. He said, I am the king of the universe, but I am going to show you what my kingdom now looks like. And he made a promise to pay the ransom, to buy back me and you. And it cost him everything. It staggers my mind to think about it. Have you ever thought of it and come up to that? And your mind just kind of shorts out? A king that does not subject his subjects, but exalts them. A king that doesn't march out and destroy his enemies, but comes into the hostile enemy camp and he heals them of their sicknesses and diseases. He loves them unconditionally. And he, as he is dying to procure peace for them, prays for them. What kind of a king is that? Has there ever been a king like that? Never. This is the king we're talking about, and this is the one who's made promises to us. This is the one that Troy doubts. I'm ashamed of it. We should be ashamed of it. If we really truly believed that he is who he says he is, not just in power, but in nature, would we worry that he was going to leave us? That he would behave falsely towards us? That he would make us promises and not keep them? Would we? Never. Ever, ever, ever. We don't understand who he is. We don't understand the glory that surrounds him. We don't understand the glory that all of heaven adores. There's coming a day when we will. And I don't think it's until we stand there, goggle-eyed, and look at heaven. And look at that city. Behold the glory of those millions, billions of angels. The exaltation of the Father's throne. The absolute peace and love that radiates from everything. That I don't think we'll understand until that happens what he left and how much he values you and how much he values me. And this is the interesting thing about God. Because if you think about it, the longer you are in his presence, the more you will understand how great he is, yes? I don't think that you can exhaust through all eternity that the majesty and glory and the increase in understanding of that majesty and glory, I think it is infinite. And yet, the greater we know God to be, the more loving we perceive him to be, the more exalted and powerful. When we see with our own eyes a world made new, the heavens made new, not by an act of labor, but by simply this God who now bears scars upon himself, speaking, and planets coming into existence before our eyes, we will start to understand how exalted and how great he is. But you know the neat thing is? The higher and more exalted and more glorious we understand our God to be, the more wonder we will experience that he would give all of that up to save us. And so it will be like this. Our understanding will be climbing the eternal heights of God's glory, which will then reflect his love. And when we think we've reached the pinnacle of that glory, we will find we haven't even reached the foothills of that mountain. And it's going to go on and on and on. For God so loved the world, will make it have a completely different meaning. So you and I, do we have reason to doubt him? Do we have to be afraid? I don't have to be afraid. You know, it's neat because when God provides for you, when he's made a promise to you, he keeps it. I remember when that carburetor went out and it was $1,800, and I looked at that piece of paper and I went, But you know, I turned to him. Nobody was there when I found out. I turned to him and I said, well, here it is. Here it is. What do you want me to do? What are you going to do? How are you going to keep your promise this time? And to make a long story short, I have a carburetor on that airplane that didn't cost me anything. And the one that was ordered for that obnoxious amount of money is going back. And it's neat because yesterday I finished the airplane. I mean, there's a few tiny little things that they're inconsequential, but essentially the airplane is finished. It ran. It sat on the apron running. All the lights worked. Everything was done. And as I shut the barn door, that's what we call a hangar. As I shut the hangar doors and I was putting it to bed, I turned to pick up my phone and I turned it on. And there across the top of the email was an acceptance letter for a really good job commencing Tuesday after the holiday. Yeah. Now, we have a God who's faithful, don't we? You know, and I felt a great deal of joy and some shame and some chagrin. But if God did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for all of us, will he not through him give us everything we need? Not just in the physical world, because God can do anything in the physical world, but in here and in here. Can he not? Will we not choose his kingship, or do you want these other ones? Which one do you want? I know which one I want. And it is the God of heaven who never breaks his word, who's always faithful, and always exalts the dust that he has animated. God bless you guys.